Murphy.
Good morning, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, opposing counsel John Murphy for the city. In the time I have, I'd like to focus on the due process issue. I think boiling down our case, or maybe distilling it using liquor terminology, the plaintiff is challenging the interpretation of a local legislative act by the local legislative body. The plaintiff is saying in this case that the ordinance which was adopted on November 26, 2007, which by its terms did not contain the hours limitation, trumps what I'll call the external circumstances.
Well, and they're also saying that if the starting point is the ordinance as the words appear on the page, and we can get into the rather chaotic meeting that led up to this ordinance, but if the starting point is that ordinance, then as I understand it, they're saying, number one, as a matter of federal due process law, this is a protectable interest. It's one of those interests that's covered under the Due Process Clause. And number two, the way the city went about changing it, diminishing it, if you will, not that the city has no power to diminish it, but the way the city went about that was not the kind of random act that might relegate them to their post-deprivation procedures, but in fact it was a conscious and planned and otherwise deliberate act that did not comply with the requirements of due process. I mean, by now the city seems like could have done a do-over about three times, but that's a different issue. So that's what I understand their argument to be. A, we have a protected interest. B, you didn't take it away from us using the right procedures.
Yes, except that I agree with the court's characterization of plaintiff's argument, with the exception that the interpretation of whether there's a property interest doesn't start from federal law, of course, as the court knows. It starts from state law.
Well, and I was careful to say that. I mean, if you looked at the ordinance as it was passed, the words of the ordinance, then what they have is a protectable interest. Now, I realize you would like us to delve into this back and forth of the meeting, and I'm happy to do that, although I do have to complain a little bit. You did not, as far as I know, file a motion with the district court to have this transcript you've appended
added
to the record. Oh, you did?
Yes, we did. That motion was granted.
So that motion was granted.
Yes.
Okay, fine. The district court followed it anyway on the DVD, so yeah, I don't think it mattered too much. But if you follow through what happened at the meeting, it looks to me like there was actually never a vote on the amendment. They just kind of skip over it. People are not really paying too much attention to Robert's Rules of Order at this meeting. And there's even mention of the fact that we're going to have a later meeting, and I've talked to the city attorney, and we're going to have to tie this up later.
If I can turn to the meeting itself for a second, the transcript of the meeting, in our view, definitively indicates that the vote was on the hours as amended.
I don't think it's definitive. I mean, you know, you can say words like clearly and definitively, but I've read through this transcript pretty carefully.
Alderman who made the motion initially was the alderman from the ward where the neighbors lived, who opposed allowing the liquor license at all. The motion to amend was made, and prior to the vote,
But it's not a vote on the motion to amend. There's never a vote on the ordinance.
Yes, there is. There was a vote where the alderman said, let's take it. There was a discussion, and the only discussion was, should we extend the time from 11 to 11:30 to accommodate Monday night football?
But listen to this ambiguous thing. I'm looking at your appendix. It's either page A-027 or at the top of the page it says page 11 of 17. And an unidentified alderman seconds something. Mayor Welsh calls for discussion. Unidentified alderman says, is this the amended? And then he's cut off. And Mayor Welsh now makes an ambiguous statement. He says, this is amended, but we're going to have to put this, I talked to our city attorney, we'll have to put this into a formal ordinance at the next council meeting. And then he says, but I'm going to give them permission to go ahead and proceed as the liquor commissioner based on council's action tonight. Now, whatever else that may be, it is not crystal clear. It could be let them go ahead and open on the usual basis and we'll come back after the city attorney has come in and gotten the ordinance amended. It could be an amendment to the overall ordinances of the city of Country Club Hills, creating a new category of licenses. It could be, I can think of dozens of things it could be. It's not particularly clear.
2 points in response to that. On page A018, the alderman who made the motion specifically specified the amendment.
And that's but that doesn't mean it took effect. The mayor says, I talked to our city attorney. We'll have to put this into a formal ordinance at the next council meeting.
And
actually, then back on page 18, there's a motion, a second. Alderman Hudson, who's not chairing the meeting, by the way, says all in favor. And Mayor Welsh says, no, 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 no. We have to have a discussion. And so then they have a discussion. And unfortunately, it just drifts off into the ether at this point.
That's the way legislatures act.
Not always. Sometimes people remember that there's a motion on the table and there's a vote.
But, Your Honor, one factual, one legal response to that point. The factual response is that we look at the minutes from the following meeting.
Why don't we just look at the language of the ordinance and say that if the city of Country Club Hills wanted to change Pro Sports Bar's license, they just needed to go through a due process hearing?
What?
How easy is that?
Our view is that that's what occurred when the ordinance was adopted. It was the adoption of the ordinance with the amended hours.
I know you've said that 1,000 times in your brief, but the problem is that's not what the ordinance says. Instead, you have this poor woman who I feel sorry for, who's the city clerk, saying, oh, I dropped the ball, I didn't do it right. And then you have people making up ordinances that were never even passed and classifications, A1, that don't exist. It's really troubling.
The minutes of the meeting specifically say that the city council approved the liquor license for this bar with the amended hours. Now, that is a definitive act of the local legislative body.
It's an after-the-fact statement. It's unclear. That's not what the license says, though. It's not what the ordinance says.
The interpretation of the legislative act by the legislative body was that we voted to give this bar the hours of operation subject to the restricted hours.
But I don't see. Suppose you passed, you put in the minutes next week that you're interpreting the ordinance that gives one of the other bars in Country Club Hills, a set of different hours. You can't just interpret away somebody's rights.
Well, that's not what occurred in this case, Your Honor. Nobody is suggesting after the fact that the city council changed anything. If anything, the record shows the opposite, that the owner of the bar came to the city 6 months later and asked for extended hours.
Well, by this time, he's been closed down. The police have been harassing him. He's been arrested. He's lost business. Of course he went. People sometimes like to clarify things, even if they shouldn't have to.
The record reflects that there was no mistake by either party as to what the hours were because they asked for an amendment to the hours to give them 2 and 3 o'clock.
No, but I think the record also shows that when he first started, he was operating just like the other bars, and it was only when the police started coming late at night that he was forced to refund parties that people had booked and the like.
I don't believe that's consistent with the record, Your Honor. The plaintiffs, Mr. Bradley, said at the beginning of his operation, he operated within the restricted hours. And he came back to the city council to ask that the hours be expanded.
I think there's other testimony that's inconsistent with that, where the police came and he was forced to make refunds to people who booked longer parties. Because the mayor actually makes an error of law in this meeting where he says, well, the bar can just stay open and not serve liquor, which, of course, is inconsistent with the governing statute.
The question then, with Your Honor's view of the facts, is which court then decides this issue? Because this really deals with the creation of the property interest.
Which we have to do all the time in due process cases, actually. Federal courts, whether it's a teacher who has tenure or whether it's somebody who has a license or whether it's anything else, federal courts always look at state law to see whether there's a protectable interest.
That is true, and this court has also said on a number of occasions when the essence of a challenge is a challenge to the interpretation of state rules by the state officials, that is a matter that belongs in state court.
No, well, I think that overstates the case a lot. I mean, you would relieve us a great deal of work. I think we would all probably have to send you a thank you note, but it's really always the case in due process cases resting on property rights that we look at state law. We never defer to state court.
But if the question is, which I believe the essence of this case, is what controls, the words of the ordinance or what I would call the legislative history?
You cite a case, which I was kind of furious, but I'll just quote what you put in the paren. This is on this Carey versus Elrod, where the intent of the legislature is otherwise clear. The judiciary possesses the authority to read language into a statute which has been omitted through legislative oversight. Now, that's a pretty broad statement, one that is pretty contrary to when we look at federal law. We don't go to legislative history and add a lot of stuff that people said because it wasn't written into the law. If this is the case, then I guess we'd have to say where the intent of the legislature is otherwise clear. And what Judge Wood is trying to point out, and I think there's some question here, is it clear? Is it clear? Because it seems that whatever the alderman's name is whose constituents are surrounded or that surround this bar, he probably doesn't want a liquor license, but he's come to get up with some sort of a compromise, it seems.
That's correct.
Whatever it is 11:30 and 12:30 or whatever he came up with. So it's already a compromise. Now, is it clear that what they're voting on is this so-called compromise language?
If we look at all of the circumstances, Your Honor, you remember that at the beginning of that council meeting or prior to the council meeting, one of the aldermen says, I don't have the votes to get you a late liquor license because the neighbors are complaining. We can get you 11:30, 12:30. Is that okay? Yes. The aldermen who appeared at the preliminary injunction hearing, one of whom testified on behalf of PROS, who was in favor of a late liquor license for PROS, I asked him, was it your understanding and your intent to grant the restricted hours license? Answer, yes.
And so when the mayor looks and says something, he's looking at the owners of the bar, says, is that you guys understanding or something? Rather?
Yeah. You okay with that?
Yeah. Are you okay with that?
That's after the entire discussion. You know, this is a local town, and this is how local politics works. This is how local compromises work. You guys okay with that, which was the discussion of the restricted hours?
It's the owners of the bar.
That's the owners of the bar. Mr. Bradley was there at the meeting. The mayor goes, you're okay with that? The answer is yes. And that's how the vote was. And the alderman goes, is this amended? And, you know, less frequently than happens in courts, the mayor interrupts and says, yeah, this is the amended. The vote.
And then he says we have to go to the city attorney and have another meeting.
And that is that. That rewinds us to the question of state law. What controls under Illinois law? The circumstances, as I pointed out, the Illinois courts allow inquiry into legislative history and circumstances to determine the intent of the legislature, whether this was literally a clerical error. The clerk forgot to put the conforming language in the ordinance.
You know, there are clerical errors and there are clerical errors. There's another one in this case that's obviously a clerical error when the new one comes out and it says 12, you know, to 12 p.m. or something, and it should have said 12 a.m. Okay, a.m., p.m. I have no problem at all seeing that as a clerical error. Forgetting to put the most crucial language in, I'm not sure we would let a district court, for example, amend a judgment and just call that kind of thing clerical. That looks pretty substantive to me.
Your Honor, the forgetting came after the vote. Please keep in mind that the ordinance was prepared in advance of that meeting in November.
Well, I know. I'm just saying that if this is different from just putting a.m. or p.m. in incorrectly or, you know, sometimes at the end of the year somebody writes 2009 and now it's 2010. I mean, you know, stuff like that happens and it gets corrected.
And this was, you know, the record evidence is that the clerk says, I dropped the ball. I just forgot to do it. The city council goes on to other business. They approve the minutes, which demonstrates that in the mind of the legislature, what we approved was the restricted hours license. Had there been any intent by any of those aldermen to say, wait a minute, we gave a full license here, they wouldn't have approved those minutes. Now, those matters have to be taken into consideration. And this case still pivots down to a individual challenging the interpretation of state rules by state officials. I mention that language because it just came up most recently by this court 10 days ago in an opinion called Gundeville versus Walker. And I believe that both Judge Mannion and Judge Wood were on that opinion. So whether or not the ordinance as written controls or the legislative history controls are fundamental questions of state law which should be litigated in state court, because that goes to the creation of the property. And as I see, I'm out of time. Thanks, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Mr. Crooks.
May it please the court, counsel. I think you've spent the last 10 minutes discussing absolutely the most important series of events in this case. In fact, I sat there with the quote that you read from the record highlighted, ready to read it, and that's the important statement. We'll have to put this into a formal ordinance at the next council meeting. He says that after he spoke to the attorneys. Now, I said in my argument, my brief, that I think the Open Meetings Act played a part in this, and by no means am I saying that it would have necessarily violated the Open Meetings Act, but you talk to a lawyer, you get conservative advice. You know, if you're going to make a special change in this ordinance for this one bar, you better give them notice, because we don't want to have to defend a lawsuit under the Open Meetings Act.
Can you tell me how the two ordinances, or how the ordinances work together? Because as I understand it, the City of Country Club Hills has some kind of generic ordinance that establishes different kinds of liquor licenses, kind of the A, the B, maybe there's a C.
I think there is a C, a retail liquor store.
And so there's that. But then, if I'm understanding this record correctly, each time an individual applicant, pro here, Company A, Company B, Company C, comes to get a liquor license, then that also takes the form of a more particularized local ordinance that has to fit under the umbrella of the general one, or is it just its own standalone ordinance? How does that work?
Well, my understanding is the ordinance has A, B, and I think a C.
I think there's a C, too.
And I think that's selling liquor directly, not to be consumed on the premises, but I don't think it's relevant exactly what that is. Everybody, all the bars in town had A licenses, which technically under the statute should have been for restaurants to sell liquor.
But so here's the question. Is it possible to pass an ordinance for pros, we'll stick with your client, that creates a new kind of liquor license that isn't already recognized in the general ordinance, is what I'll call it, the one that says we have an A and a B and a C class? Or do you actually have to amend that ordinance first to say, well, we're also going to have an A1 class, which will be restricted hours for restaurants. We'll have a B1 class, so it'll be restricted hours for bars or whatever. Now, see what I'm saying?
Right. I know exactly what you're saying. And as I read the ordinances, you would have to change the local ordinance as well, because it has an A, a B, and a C. That's why in the spring everybody went to a B, which is where they all should have been. So I think that change really is not significant other than to show they had these different categories. When my client thought he was operating under a Class A license, and I frankly dispute what counsel says, the record shows that Mr. Bradley testified that when he got his A license, it was an A license. He knew what the ordinance said. This was a confusing city council meeting in November, but clearly they gave him an A license. He operated in an A license with full hours. That's why a few weeks later, a Class A1 license is brought to him, something that's not in the statute. He immediately started talking to aldermen. What is this?
And there never was any A1. This was all just created, right?
Exactly right. But there was a proposed statute for an A1, a proposed ordinance.
Which would have
ordinance.
Amended what I'm calling the general ordinance?
Exactly yeah, right, okay. Which never got out of committee, has never been voted on. And voted on, I think, is the key thing here, because council wants to argue, oh, they all knew they were voting on restricted hours that day. But the facts show that that's just not the case. The alderman who was clearly troubled, Alderman Lockett, by the limited hours, tried to get them extended. His testimony came into the hearing via his dep, and he said he was in favor of full hours, yet he was one of the unanimous people that voted for the ordinance on November 26th. Why? Because this ordinance gave a liquor license, and he wanted them to have a liquor license.
So for how many weeks did the bar operate? It was only a very short time, right, on full hours?
It was a question of several weeks, because when they got the what I call the phony ordinance, in fact, if you look at the exhibits, it actually has line outs and underlines showing changes, computer markup changes on it. Clearly it had not been...
Draft changes?
Draft changes. That's exactly right. And so clearly it wasn't an ordinance, but my client doesn't know this. Now he's given this A1 ordinance. All right, I guess I'm stuck. I guess I have to do that. But the other evidence that shows that what they did was to grant a full Class A liquor license is council argues, well, the clerk just forgot to make this clerical change. Because here's what happens. The Class A liquor license ordinance, or the ordinance that gives Pros a Class A liquor license, after the vote, she takes that. She has to add to it what the vote was. She has to sign it as clerk, and then the mayor has to sign it. In this case, it was a signature stamp. If they had voted on restricted hours, that would have been the time for her to insert that. But instead, what she did is she drafted a new ordinance with the restricted hours. You know it's a new ordinance. There's no ordinance number on it. That you get at the council meeting. Clearly, she was going to bring this new ordinance to the next meeting, as the mayor said. We will have to put this into a formal ordinance the next council meeting.
Was but that sort of a conformance? I'm not clear about what can happen in these kinds of things, but if it has to actually go through the formal process and be written and approved as written, et cetera, that's one thing. The question is, was she writing something that she thought conformed to what was already achieved? Because that's, I think, what they're trying to argue. If you just look at the record, if you translate it that way, this is a property right that was established based on all the discussion.
If that's what she was thinking, then she could easily have put that into the Class A ordinance that day, if that's what the act of the city council was. She instead followed what the mayor said and drafted a new ordinance. Now, why that wasn't brought up at the next meeting, she says she dropped the ball. Well, did the mayor drop the ball? Did Alderman Watts drop the ball? How many people dropped the ball? And more importantly, if we assume that there was somebody dropped the ball and they didn't bring this new ordinance the next month, are we also to take the defendant's assumption that it would have passed?
Well, on that point, Mr. Crooks, after that, those comments by the mayor that you cited and Judge Woods cited, the mayor then calls for a roll call. And all 10 aldermen vote. What are they voting on at that point?
They're voting on a liquor license, a Class A liquor license for pro sports. I don't think you can come to any other conclusion, because the mayor made it clear just before the vote that the issue of the restricted hours will be addressed at the next meeting. But, in fact, his language even saying, but let's get these people get their business open. Let's get them a liquor license so they can start going.
What hours would they be expected to adhere to then?
Under the statute in Country Club Hills, there were only one set of hours.
So you stay open late.
On weekends, you're open till the week. I think it's 2 a.m. The weekends, 3 a.m.
Seemed that he tried to conform to the whatever they said at that meeting. Didn't he close earlier?
No. He opened initially. He had the full hours. That was his clear testimony. When he got the Class A1 license delivered to him, he was wondered what it meant, but since it wasn't in the ordinance, he had no reason to think that this meant restricted hours. He really didn't know. When he got the phony ordinance delivered to him, then he thought, now I'm stuck.
This of course, is all, at the after, same, all after that meeting, right?
Oh, this is well. This is we're talking the following January right. into February, and of course at this time the police are making arrests. The police are showing up, and you know at some point whether you think you're being wronged or not, you just bow to the police power. You try to limp along and run your business. Counsel brings up the fact that there was a vote in March that tied 5-5 on the extended hours, and characterized it as pros seeking extra hours. That's not the case at all. He's got a business. He's drowning. He's going to the alderman saying, what is this? I thought I had a regular liquor license. The alderman, quite frankly, wanted to clarify it. It made perfect sense. 5-5 vote. The most important thing that comes out of that is it tells us there's no way that 3 months earlier it was going to be a 10-0 vote to give him restricted hours. Clearly, that was there's no evidence as to how they would have voted if that issue had been squarely put before him. They voted for a liquor license. He got a liquor license. Under the ordinance, there's only one set of hours that attaches to this liquor license. There's no dispute amongst the parties that a liquor license and the retention and renewal of a liquor license raises due process issues. Just no question at all.
So I'd like you to say a few words about the possibility of post-deprivation remedies. The district court mentions the Supreme Court's decision in Pratt against Taylor, and your opponents haven't relied on that, so perhaps they've waived any potential reliance on it. But there's some talk of, you know, could you go use mandamus? Could you do other things?
Right, and I understand that. And, of course, we have argued that they waived it because they never raised this issue until the final pleading they filed.
Well, and they didn't say a word about it in this court, so whatever they were doing below, maybe they've waived it for appeal.
I would certainly agree with that. I think the problem with that is when we talk post-deprivation, and I know they said this in their brief, that, well, okay, let's give them a hearing now. If they want it. In fact, their argument was they don't want a hearing, they want their hours. Well, we do want our hours. But what's the problem with a post-deprivation hearing now is to get it, we file a lawsuit. The mayor's the liquor commissioner. Where are we going to get a fair post-deprivation hearing? And, in fact, a post-deprivation hearing would by no means remedy the financial losses that have been visited upon the plaintiffs during the period until finally they got their full hours. It's completely inadequate. You know, frankly, and I don't think that's where this should go at all. In fact,
so the merits of this case, assuming the injunction stays in place, will sooner or later go before the district court. This is just a preliminary injunction.
This is just a preliminary injunction, Your Honor. I'm very anxious to get this case back in the district court so we can do full discovery and proceed to trial. Mm-hmm. People invest their sweat, their money, their time into a business. They're led down one road, and I don't think they should be cut short the way they are being cut short here. The standard is clear error on the facts, so with the central fact being this question of what did the City Council do in November of 2007, I just don't think there's any way you can say that the district court judge committed clear error by indicating that they granted a Class A license. As to granting of the injunction, again, it may be a high standard for me to get the injunction, but once the judge has ruled, you have to find it's an abuse of discretion. And there certainly was no abuse of discretion here. I think the preliminary injunction should stand, and we should be able to go forward with our case on that basis. If there's no more questions, I'll have a seat.
Thank you, Mr. Crooks.
Thank you.
Mr. Murphy, your time has expired, but you may have a minute.
Two quick points on the post-deprivation. We did raise that in the district court and in our briefs.
You never cited Perot against Taylor. You never briefed it. You never told us how it applies, even though the district court referred to it.
We cited the Seventh Circuit's more recent jurisprudence on post-deprivation state court remedies, and so we've raised the issue in light of the more recent cases. So we believe we preserved that issue. If I could just respond to the two questions that Judge Flom and Judge Mannion asked. All right, after November 26th, when the mayor says, this is amended, but, you know, we'll be a nice guy and let you guys open, can anybody really conceive on this record that, well, you can open for 2 weeks and stay open until 2 or 3 in the morning, but then 2 weeks later you're going to have your hours rolled back? That's just not logical. it goes back to the no good deed goes unpunished. The city adopted the ordinance with restricted hours. That was their intent. And they said, in the meantime, until we get the paperwork fixed up, we'll let you open with those hours. It's inconceivable that the city would have said, you can stay open until 3 for the first 2 weeks, then roll back once we get the paperwork. And everybody spoke about Alderman Lockett. I just would ask the court to look at page 22 of our opening brief, that the aldermen who specifically agree that it was better to give the bar half a loaf now and come back later for the full hours. Again, if this is a question of intent, it should really be resolved in the state court, not in the federal court.
You never filed a motion to abstain, I take it.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
You never filed a motion for Burford or any other kind of abstention in the federal court?
No, we did not, because as to other aspects of the case, equal protection, there was clear federal jurisdiction.
It's not abstention doesn't say there isn't. Abstention says you ought to go to the state court.
Well, we raise that issue on the post-deprivation in terms of state court remedies issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Thank you, Mr. Crooks. The case is taken under advisement.